Well, thank you everyone for making it over today on this rather chilly Sunday morning. And I hope everybody's getting ready for the holidays. So I'm talking about awakening, which is a very interesting word. And of course, it has more than one meaning. And I'm going to be talking mostly about the, if you will, religious concept of awakening, but broader than that. I asked the people who come to the weekly meditation group this last week what they thought awakening might mean in its more spiritual deepening aspect. So one person said, well, it was very simple. You wake up from sleep in the morning, and you get up, and you have coffee. I said, okay, that's a good start. And that's actually quite true, and that's why the term awakening is such an important one, because it is really waking up from a dreaming state into a new reality. Others at the group suggested that awakening was being totally present and aware of all everything around us and within us at the same time. Another person I know who was not here said, well, awakening is like knowing everything on the internet at the same time. And I thought, well, that's an interesting perspective, because there are some really wonderful things on web and some things that aren't so wonderful, but okay, that works. So the topic of awakening is what I wanted to speak about today, and it's very significant in this month of December. First of all, obviously, as you know, we're approaching the winter solstice and the longest time of darkness in the year. And awakening can be the joyful anticipation of longer days of sun, the promise of springtime, and the blooms of flowers, new leaves, and birds singing. It is a time of anticipation as we begin to see the sun coming up earlier and more daylight. And it's somehow, at least for me, a place where if I have depression, it begins to lift it. Another type of awakening during the holidays happens early on Christmas morning. I still recall, as a child on the farm in Maine, my eager anticipation of Santa's visit. I would wake up somewhere between 4 and 5 a.m. and go downstairs to the library, and we had a room in the house that was devoted to books, and it was a fireplace, and of course stockings across the fireplace mantle. So I'd go to wake up, and I would go down. The fireplace would be cold, of course, but the stockings miraculously were full of goodies. Now, I'm probably not the only child who did this, but then I would wake everyone else in the house up, because Santa had indeed come to visit, and it was time to take down the stockings and see what treats were inside. I was also able to open one gift from under the tree. After that was done, everybody, including me, went back to bed for another few hours. But there was another form of awakening, which is a kind of a nuanced type of awakening. The Christmas Eve ritual was to leave carrots by the fireplace for Santa's reindeer. They would always be gone by the next morning, and I think I was about 6 or 7 when I went out to milk the cows on Christmas morning, and I discovered those very same carrots in the horse stall being chewed on by the elderly horse. I awoke to some concerns about the Santa story, and I told my foster parents in the house about what had happened, and they said, oh, that's very simple. Santa took them out to the barn and gave them to the horse, because the reindeer didn't want them. That worked. But there's another type of December awakening story, and it's one akin to the one I told you earlier in the opening words. December 8th is the traditional date when Shakyamuni Buddha achieved full enlightenment, or awakening, which is another term for it, as he sat under a fig tree in India. Buddhist communities around the world celebrate Bodhi Day, or Awakening Day, and have special events like retreats and special meals. One of them is, by the way, a 7-day retreat which will start tonight, that Deborah is going to be attending in Oregon, and we will have no communication for a week. The old stories, and of course we have to take these old stories with a certain grain of salt, was that Shakyamuni was a prince who had a lot of wealth and not a care in the world. Now, the kingdom in which he lived, and he was the son of the king, was probably the size of Crawford County, which in those days was quite a large parcel of land. His father was determined that Shakyamuni would not become a monastic, which the fortune tellers said he would become, and he wanted him to grow up to be king. So he did not allow him out of the palace. Finally, the young prince and his attendant slipped out of the palace late at night and entered the town just to see what it was all about. The story goes that they found someone who was ill, and then another person who was old, and then a third person who had died. The young prince was appalled by such conditions and the reality of life. He was appalled by it, and he kept asking, why is this so? Why, and how do we respond? He later left the palace without telling his father, by the way, and undertook a life as a wandering monk. In that time in India, there were many of these people, and they took vows of not only abstinence, but also fasting, so they had very little food. And I should add here that when he left the palace and left his life, he also left his wife and a newborn child, which has always been a complex issue to address. But as I said, he was dissatisfied with the riches and the intense and cruelty of life that he'd seen on the outside. And he spent 6 years with teachers trying to address, why is life the way it is? And none of the teachers that he encountered and taught, learned under, could answer his questions. He finally decided that none of them really had a good answer, but he was going to sit quietly in meditation until he had it understood. And so the story goes again that he continued to sit, some say 49 days, who knows how long it was, and he sat and sat in silent meditation. And early one morning, he was sitting and then saw a bright star just before dawn, and it was probably Venus. That moment when he saw that star, so the stories go, was his moment of awakening into clear, pure, final enlightenment. He realized at that moment all of his past lives, the work of karma, the law of cause and effect, and he learned a new way of how to be ethical, compassionate, and to attain wisdom. And I'm going to say compassionate, not in the way that we think of it in the West as mercy, but compassionate as the ultimate of love. These ideas became later known as the Four Noble Truths. And the first one is called the life is suffering. Now, suffering is not the correct word. The only word that really comes close out of the Pali and Sanskrit languages is perhaps dissatisfaction or dis-ease. The conditions of dissatisfaction or dukkha or suffering lie inside of us universally. The third noble truth is there is a way out, and the fourth is the Eightfold Path, which were the ways of practice and developing patience, wisdom, and clarity over time of practice. So he taught those practices of spiritual and personal liberation from suffering, quote unquote, for the next 40 years. His awakening was somewhat like the wisdom of Jesus after his temptation in the desert, and many great teachers have had similar experiences of going into a place of almost temptation to return to material riches and so on. And then they say, no, that is not necessary. And this is what happened to him, and I think happened to Jesus and Muhammad and so many other great teachers. Now, when I lived in a Zen monastery in Oregon, I was taught that awakening experiences are important because we all have them. But they're not so important that we can think, okay, now I'm done with practice, I can get on with my life and go have some ice cream. Practice to develop awakening, awareness of everything around us and inside of us is a lifelong practice. Those moments of aha-ness, those insights, show us the path of wisdom and compassion, but we are the ones always who have to decide whether we will follow that path, even toward in times of darkness or not. And I would say again, every single one of us has had and will have such moments in our lives when there's an insight or an awareness of, oh, now I understand, whatever it might be. So let's go back to that story about the spider and the monastic. I had mentioned to you earlier that she had an issue with bugs. She had told me when we were working in the garden some days before, because I was living at the monastery, about she didn't really like bugs that much. So I just remembered that. So years of meditation practice and awareness allowed her to sit with complete equanimity as that spider crossed the room and climbed down the inside of her robes. And I thought to myself, well, that's like a cat who knows the one person who hates cats in the room and will immediately go to that person. Here's what happened. No movement. No noise, no visible anxiety, Compassion arose. After the sitting session was over, she stood up and she kind of shook her robes a bit, and a spider fell down onto the floor. She carefully picked it up and carried it out of the meditation hall for safety. The quote in the front of your order of service says, awakening is nothing special. And for her, and I talked to her afterwards about it, it was said, it's nothing special. I just had to sit through it and breathe through it, and whatever would happen, would happen. And that's what she did. Awakening is not exclusive to one religion or secular teaching. In our universalist tradition, we might say that all beings awaken to ultimate wisdom and compassion. Not some, not a few, not teachers, everyone. All of you here, your descendants, your ancestors, everyone will awaken. And we have moments of insight and awakening and enlightenment all the time, whether we are aware of them or not. And our task is to learn from those, teach others, and then, as they say in the 12-step tradition, practice these principles in all our affairs. Now, in a few moments, you will have your annual meeting. Officially, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think I'm right, it's your 197th year business meeting. Now, I have no idea what your first 191 or so were like, but I'll bet they were a little bit like this. And it's an important meeting because, in my opinion, as a longtime visitor here, and I've been here almost 4 years, I see an awakening happening. We have all, you, me, these religious communities around us, have all gone through a very intense period of time the last several years, thanks to COVID, politics, and all the dramas in the world. But what is happening from my perspective as an outsider is that you have gone through a time not of sleepiness, but of, are we going to make it? Will we be okay? Will we survive? And now you are reawakening to your purpose, to your caring for one another, but not just one another, but to people and places and work outside of these walls. And that is the most important of them all, I think. So as you move forward and you have your annual meeting and the weeks and months to come, here are some questions I would invite you to ponder. Is church a place to learn ethical, compassionate, and wise values of life, including all the things that we don't know yet? Is this religious community a place where no one set of teachings is exclusive or correct? Is this work that you are doing, all of you are doing, a part of your mission and new vision that we recited this morning, is part of that vision to help everyone, not just Unitarian Universalists, not just people in Meadville, but anywhere? Is it to help everyone to awaken to our true, stupendous, wise, and loving natures? Do you think that that is part of who you are? And I don't know about any of you, but as a longtime visitor, I will say yes. And I also believe you will prove it. May it be so. So now we come to another important moment in our service called the offering. Please, the ushers will come forward. We will play some more music. And by the way, Amy, thank you so much for picking the music for today. Amy is our music director. And we offer our financial gifts to sustain this church and its work in the community. Our Share the Plate recipient this month is St. James Haven. So please feel welcome to put in your pledges or anything else you desire, and we will be deeply appreciative while we listen to some beautiful music. If the ushers would come forward and let's say in unison, as in your order of service, our words for receiving the offering. Could we share together, please? We give to remind ourselves how many gifts we have to offer. We give to remember that we are part of something bigger than ourselves.
We give because we believe in music.
Sacred space, and children, and all who enter this sanctuary. We give with the faith that together we have abundance. So thank you to the ushers. Thank you all for your generosity this morning and every week. Before I extinguish the chalice, I'm going to do closing words, and actually they're in your order of service, and I'm going to just say them myself, and then you can read them, you can take them in, because I think they speak to the understanding and awareness of what awakening is about. And then I'll extinguish the chalice, and then we will have a postlude before you get to have your annual meeting. These closing words by Elena Westbrook, who was a Unitarian Universalist. Let every moment be a prayer. With every sip of tea, let your lips move in thanksgiving. Be fully present to every stroke of the hairbrush, every cup of milk you pour for the children. Be present without judgment or regret, without plans or expectations or even dreams. And every moment becomes a prayer. May it be so. Peace, amen, shalom, namaste, blessed be.